Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia. Kathy Willis-Spratz is the President and Chief Executive Officer of Chimp Haven, the National Chimpanzee Sanctuary in Keithville, Louisiana. We'll talk with her about our long history of exploitation of chimpanzees, about major changes in the use of chimpanzees in biomedical research, and about why these great apes who have given so much to humans deserve to retire in comfort and freedom. Kathy Willis-Spratz, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yours is a really interesting story because you spent more than two decades involved in human services, working with children with disabilities and with victims of domestic violence. How did you wind up working with our closest living relatives?
The thing that drew me to Chimp Haven is, first of all, I'm an animal lover and go way back with animals of my own. But I also knew that I could transfer my skills to any other nonprofit organization as long as I believed in the mission and felt like it was a strong mission that I could get behind. When I was thinking about the next thing I wanted to do with my life, I saw this job posting for the president and thought, oh, they're going to want somebody with a primatology background or an animal welfare background. And when I opened up the job description, I was like, they want somebody like me, somebody who has nonprofit fundraising, all those kinds of skills that you need to really run a nonprofit organization. And animal welfare was great, but didn't have to be a deal breaker. And I really didn't expect them to call me because my background was so different. And 2 days after that, they did call me and we talked, and then they flew me to Shreveport where I met with staff and the board of directors. And, you know, I actually thought I wouldn't take the position because I'm an urban girl, you know, grew up in Atlanta, like sidewalks.
And here you are in Keithville, Louisiana.
And here I was in Keithville, Louisiana, in the middle of nowhere. And in fact, I tease people all the time saying it looked like Sasquatch lived there because it was just so forested. I was thinking, I'm just going to go through the motions and be polite, but I don't think this is for me. And when I got out of the car and walked up to the administration building, Henry, who happens to be my favorite chimp and the reason I came to Chimp Haven, was sitting on the highest perch, which is like a telephone pole, sort of, and both feet on this pole, just like the thinker. And I remember just audibly gasping.
You said, my heart just opened in a way that I didn't think possible.
Absolutely.
And I think that's what happens to people when they watch any of the Chimp Haven videos that are online or any of the other sanctuaries for chimpanzees.
That's right. My heart opened in a way that I never thought it could, and I just knew that this was the right place for me.
Henry's story is probably typical, but absolutely heartbreaking. Henry spent 15 years in a filthy, dirty cage. He started his life as a pet to someone who didn't realize chimpanzees should never be a pet.
That's right. A lot of what the general public sees are babies, either babies on greeting cards, babies in movies, babies in TV commercials, because adult chimpanzees are, you know, they say sometimes 7 to 9 times stronger than the average human male.
Even though they may not weigh more. An adult may only be 130 pounds.
But they're very dense. They don't have body fat. They're very muscular, very strong. And so when you see these babies and they look so cute and they're grinning and people think, oh, wow, look at that chimpanzee. He's having a great time. No, that's not true. He's actually fear grimacing because chimpanzees don't smile the way we smile. And so,
but they do smile and they do
laugh. Oh, they do smile and they do laugh. They absolutely do. But There are a couple of breeders in this country who breed chimpanzees for sale, and people who don't know any better can actually buy a baby chimp. What happens, though, is within 5 years, they realize that that chimpanzee has become way more unruly than they anticipated, much stronger than they are, much more willful, and really a dangerous animal to have in the home.
What they don't also know is how many chimpanzees were probably killed procuring that one baby.
That's exactly right. You know, up until 1975, I believe, the United States was taking baby chimps out of the wild. And the tragedy of that was that they would have to kill at least 6 chimpanzees, adult chimpanzees, to get to that baby. And it really did have an impact on the overall population. Of course, there are other things in the natural habitats in Africa that are decimating their habitats. Overforestation, poaching, bushmeat. The bushmeat trade is incredibly strong in Africa. And so, you know, a chimpanzee is a pretty hot commodity when it comes to procuring its meat and then selling it on the open market.
Retirement for chimpanzees that were used in biomedical research has come, in some respects, at a glacially slow pace. Chimphaven was actually established in 1995, but it wasn't until 2005 that you got your first two residents, Rita and Teresa.
That's right. So it took the founders a long time, really, to identify a suitable place. They wanted a place that was a mild weather, that would be friendly to chimpanzees, and after many, many years of searching, the Caddo Parish in Keefe, Louisiana, actually gifted 200 acres of pristine forest, a perfect place for a sanctuary with plenty of elm trees and yaupon holly trees, and the chimpanzees loved that vegetation, and so it was really quite perfect for them.
And we wouldn't even be talking about this if it were not for the Chimp Act. Give us a little bit of the history of how Chimp Haven came to be the national sanctuary for chimpanzees.
Sure. Well, in 2000, the Chimp Act was passed. That's the Chimpanzee Health Improvement Maintenance Protection Act, signed into law by then President Clinton. And it did two things. It allowed for the creation of a federal sanctuary, and it also gave the government an incentive to retire them. Because remember, back in 2000, chimpanzees were still being used in a significant way in biomedical research. However, when a chimpanzee was done in research, they stayed in the lab. They were in a contained space. And so it was those chimpanzees that the founders of Chimp Haven were really looking at, not knowing when research might end. And so in 2005, we had our first two chimpanzees, Rita and Teresa. And then after that, they began to trickle in, and some in great numbers. But it wasn't until June of 2013 that they actually retired federally owned chimpanzees from research.
The director of NIH, Dr. Francis Collins, actually said, "Americans have benefited greatly from the chimpanzee's service to biomedical research, but new scientific methods and technologies have rendered their use in research largely unnecessary."
That's right.
So often they were infected with hepatitis and with HIV, and I wonder if they were even very good test subjects, knowing that rarely did HIV turn into full-blown AIDS among chimpanzees.
That's right. So they really were a poor research model, particularly for HIV and AIDS research, and Hep C. We still don't have a vaccine for Hep C. You know, people can argue one way or the other. Some people can argue that they were probably never great models for any of the research. If you want to cure human disease, you mostly have to use human subjects.
With consent.
With consent, of course. But there are technologies in place that allow for researchers to do a great deal of their work without using animals as a model.
Now, 75% of the care and upkeep of these chimpanzees that have come from biomedical research, from federal programs, is paid for by NIH. How do you pay for or fund the rest of the chimpanzees that are in your care, including those who were in the entertainment industry or like Henry, who was an abused pet?
Right. Well, you know, the Chimp Act not only paved the way for the federal sanctuary to be created, it also gave the government a financial incentive for retiring them because people wanted them retired, but, you know, they just stayed in the labs.
For decades often.
Absolutely. And so the federal government realized that if they changed the cost sharing so that it was not 100% but 75-25, then that would be a much better deal for them. It would save the taxpayers money. And so the rest of the funding comes from the typical places that nonprofit organizations receive money. We have some incredibly generous individual donors.
Bob Barker for
Bob a while. Barker is one, yes. I can name others. So we have a very generous group of donors who really care about this issue. And, of course, we get grants and other typical sources of support.
One of the interesting stories about Chimp Haven is that these primates, these great apes, are coming to Chimp Haven for retirement. And yet a number of chimpanzees have actually been born there. Accidentally, I should say. The chimpanzee that's fathered at least three of these chimpanzees underwent a vasectomy that was unsuccessful. And again, it leads me to say we are very similar to chimpanzees, but also different.
That's right. So we definitely are. And I think the thing that separates chimps and humans is that there are those subtle differences. We have 98.7% same DNA, but that other little less than a percent difference does make a difference. So vasectomies would regrow at an incredibly fast rate, I might add. And chimpanzees heal better than humans and much faster. So there are some differences that make chimpanzees unique. But we've only had three oops babies.
And they're all adorable.
And we hope there are no more, and they are adorable.
You know, I think a lot of people, what they know about chimpanzees, they know from seeing them on television. So I have to ask, how would you rate the Disney documentary Chimpanzee?
I think it was an excellent documentary and really gave people some insight into what it's like in the wild, and particularly when a chimpanzee becomes orphaned, and they do quite often. In fact, our three oops babies that were born at Chimp Haven, Tracy, our first born
oops baby, right?
Oops baby, her mother passed away when she was 4 years old. And chimpanzees typically nurse and depend on their mothers until they're 5 years old. And the aunties in the group just took her and raised her and, you know, made sure that she was protected from everything that she might encounter. And so, you know, I think that just understanding how important it is that when a chimpanzee loses its mother, how the rest of the group can care for them. Natalie, our youngest baby, just lost her mother this year.
And her mother was old when she had her.
Yes, she was.
42, when
yes.
you consider that the life expectancy yes. for a chimpanzee in the wild anyway right. is 40 to 50 years. And here she was 42 giving birth to
really
a baby.
And it's really interesting because we noticed a change in Ginger. We knew that she was failing. And we also noticed her pushing Natalie away more. It was almost as if she were preparing Natalie for her not being there. And it's amazing how the rest of the group makes sure that she has somebody to sleep with. The other youngsters in the group actually carry her around on their back. The other day I was down in the animal area, and Tracy, the first oops baby, who is 8 now, was hanging upside down from the skylight inside animal area, and Natalie was on her tummy. And they were upside down. It was really cute.
You
they take care of each other.
You have one chimpanzee who has alopecia, not any hair on her entire
right.
body. Is that animal accepted by the rest of the group?
Yeah, amazingly, yes. We have a number of chimps who do have special needs. There's one who most people would say he has the same behaviors as a person with autism. So he acts very different than the rest of the chimps. But the chimps accept him just fine. And in fact, one or two will actually gravitate toward that special needs chimp and care for them and make sure that they get food. Because, you know, if you're the lowest ranking chimpanzee in the social group, you usually get the last of what's available.
Are there some chimpanzees, because of behavioral problems or because they have HIV or hepatitis, that they have to be isolated?
No, not in our view. We have had chimpanzees come to Chimp Haven who were singly housed before they arrived, with the admonition that this chimp can never be introduced to other chimps. They're too violent, they've killed another chimp, or whatever, fill in the blank. And we found that at Chimp Haven, our goal is to introduce every single chimp to other chimps. And we've had great success, 99% success rate in introducing chimps, and we don't have even one that lives by itself.
If you're just joining us, this is Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia. Today's guest is Kathy Willis-Spratz, President and Chief Executive Officer of Chimp Haven, the National Chimpanzee Sanctuary in Keithville, Louisiana. The 200-acre refuge provides sanctuary to chimpanzees retired after years or decades of invasive biomedical research, as well as privately owned chimpanzees who proved unmanageable to keep as pets or performers. If we look at a human who's been imprisoned for decades, their adjustment back into normal society can be very, very difficult. What is it like for these chimpanzees who may have spent 20 or 30 years and have been ill in some cases when they come to you?
Well, you know, every chimpanzee is unique, and so just like humans. They're extremely resilient like we are. So many of us are able to overcome some of the difficulties and traumas that we've experienced in our lives. Same goes with the chimps. Some of them are traumatized by spending decades in small spaces that are mostly mesh and concrete. And we refer to those chimpanzees as wall walkers. When they come out into the open air space or in the habitats, they very often will just hover near the concrete walls or the mesh because that's what they're used to, that's what they're comfortable with. However, we have seen chimps go from that to actually walking across the play yard or actually using the habitat. Sometimes it takes years and years for that to happen, but we never give up on them.
In fact, you have video of one chimpanzee who's hanging on to a chain link fence and occasionally letting a foot brush on the grass.
Yes.
It must be absolutely heart-wrenching in some ways to see how they're coming back to life in a way.
Yeah, you know, I think the real difference in sanctuary is that the chimps have self-determination. They can make choices of who they want to be with, whether they want to sleep inside or whether they sleep outside. The only time we lock them out of their indoor areas is when we're cleaning them, and typically they will shift out into the outdoors because they like it outside. That gives us an opportunity to clean their spaces. But other than that, if they want to sleep in the habitat, they have the freedom to do that. When we see them in the habitat, we don't call their names or call them to us because what we want is for them to remember how it feels to be a chimp. And so we want them to connect to each other rather than to us.
Well, you mentioned names, and I think it was Jane Goodall who first started naming chimpanzees.
And she got a lot of criticism
for that. But I noticed that so many of the chimpanzees that have made it to Chimp Haven actually have numbers tattooed on their chests. So I'm kind of curious about the whole naming thing, why you do it, and who comes up with the names.
Well, actually, even though the ID number of the chimpanzees was tattooed on the chimpanzee just to make sure they knew which chimp they were using, they did name the chimps in the labs. And so the only babies that we've named are the ones that were born at Chimp Haven. And occasionally we will come up with a middle name because we may have a chimp that's coming to us from a lab whose name is the same as another chimp that's in. So Queenie is a perfect example. And our staff then have a contest and select the middle name for that chimp. And so we now have a Queenie and a Queenie Latifah after Queen Latifah. So we have a lot of fun doing that.
You know, one of the things you do for stimulation, because what they lost in captivity was any normal stimulation, and so you are giving them as much of that as possible. Part of it, surprisingly, is a chance to create artwork, mm-hmm. which kind of has a dual purpose.
Not all the chimps like to paint, but we certainly give them the opportunity if they want to. We offer enrichment, novel enrichment, 7 days a week.
This is a real retirement home.
Right. 4 out of 7 of those days, it's food-based enrichment. So it's typically a novel fruit or food that they have to really work at to get. So it encourages that foraging behavior that's typical for a chimpanzee. It also keeps their mind sharp. And so anything that we can do to try to enhance their environment, and painting goes along with that. Not all the chimps like to paint, but some of them are very, very good at it. We have some beautiful artwork.
Which actually serves as a fundraising tool as well. So some of these pieces of artwork available for sale. Some chimpanzees, I understand, paint with a paintbrush, and there's one that paints with his tongue.
Right. Brent, actually, a great favorite of Chimp Haven staff. Brent recently passed away. But he was a prolific artist, and he had the unorthodox approach to painting where he would use his tongue. So he would put the paint on the canvas and then lick it. And so you had all these tongue prints, but it turned out to be a really beautiful piece of art. And then we have Les, who refuses to use a paintbrush, and he prefers a feather duster. So it gives a lot of ethereal look to the art that Les does.
Well, this makes me kind of realize just how different their personalities are. Another thing that makes them seem close to us.
Right. I mean, I think people see chimpanzees and they think, oh, they all look alike. But when you really look closer and you can see a number of chimpanzee photographs on our website, you'll see how different they are. They all look different. They all act different. They have different temperaments. And I will add that, the naming is really important for us. Our animal care staff, including our behaviors, have to know and be able to identify every chimpanzee at Chimp Haven. We have 205 chimpanzees, and they can pick them out.
Speaking of looks, when they came to you, many of them were flaccid, they didn't have much hair, they had skin problems, and the difference before and after is absolutely amazing.
The combination of really excellent care, and that's not to say they didn't get excellent care in the labs, because in most cases they actually did, but they didn't have as much space to move around in and as much access to the outdoors as they do at Chimp Haven. Chimpanzees actually can sunburn. In the summer, they get really, really dark. And just being out and getting fresh air and having really good food and lots of vegetables and fruits available to them, they just really begin to look better.
Well, when you say that many of them came from situations they were well cared for, most of them are in university settings. But according to Jane Goodall and others, all research facilities are not alike. Some, in her description, are absolutely horrendous in terms of the size of the space and the fact that these very social primates are isolated. And as you're seeing in Chimp Haven, these are very social animals.
Absolutely. Well, and you know, I think it's tough because when an animal is in a research protocol, very often they're singly housed because they're doing research. And so having other variables in the environment really changes the landscape. But it is a very sad existence for a chimpanzee to live by themselves. They are very social animals. They live in very large social groups in the wild, sometimes as many as 100 chimpanzees in a group. So it's really gratifying to us to get those chimps at Chimp Haven into large social groups.
Well, interestingly, your favorite chimpanzee, Henry, who lived 15 years in a dark, dank garage in his own filth, came out and he wasn't well socialized, but according to Chimp Haven, he's now really the alpha male.
Yeah, he is.
So he's come a long way.
He has. Now, he probably wouldn't be the alpha male in a different group, but in this particular group, he is, and they let him do that, you know, without any problem. When Henry first came, he didn't know how to be submissive, and that's something they learn from birth. They learn the pecking order and the hierarchy, and there's a very complicated hierarchy in chimp social groups, and it changes, particularly if there are more than one dominant male, and they're always vying and jockeying for that position. So to see Henry go from being totally inappropriate in a social setting, as far as chimps are concerned, to becoming the alpha male is really quite a testimony to how smart they are and how much they can learn.
The director of the NIH says because chimpanzees are so like humans, that it increases our responsibility in using them only when it is absolutely necessary. So I'm kind of wondering, on one hand, they're retiring all of these chimpanzees, but there's sort of a foot on the brake and a foot on the gas because they've withheld 50 chimpanzees. Mm-hmm. Why? And do you think there will ever be a day where we say, you know what, we can do enough of this using modern technology and we don't need animals?
Yes, I do think that day is coming. You know, I'm very optimistic, actually, that the 50 that are going to be held in reserve until they know whether or not there are protocols that would pass the IOM recommendations. I do think I'm going to see those chimps retired, and we can celebrate that.
There are some researchers, though, who have pushed back at NIH and said, you're doing this too quickly, and there is a need. They justify the need for chimpanzees in research.
Well, I mean, I think that people are on both sides of the fence. And I think that if you're used to doing research with an animal in a certain way, that's what you know, and you anticipate that you're going to find the breakthrough. But I do think that based on what the Institute of Medicine said, that the kind of research that has been done, you know, in the past couple of years with chimpanzees is really no longer necessary. We're not learning anything new. And even after the Institute of Medicine came out with their recommendations, then the National Institutes of Health put together a working group of individuals, veterinarians, primatologists, who actually looked at the IOM's recommendations and made recommendations of their own. And so I think that, you know, the day is really coming where it's going to end.
Well, one of the recommendations is that those that are still held in captivity, that they have a certain square footage of space, that they aren't isolated, that they're in partnership in these cages. And from what I'm reading, there's not a single lab that has lived up to those recommendations yet.
The recommendations are really, really strict, and that's a good thing. Chimphaven, almost all of our areas where we house chimps fulfills those obligations.
Oh, no, I don't mean you.
No,
mean
I know that. Okay. I know that. But, I mean, people ask that question, particularly people from the research side. Well, Chimphaven doesn't even fit these. Well, we don't have to because it's not for the sanctuaries. That's for the chimps that are kept in labs. They want these ethologically appropriate spaces. And they are very tough. And I think that probably they were made tough for a very good reason. The reason being that they are no longer necessary in research and that they will fare better in a sanctuary setting.
Infectious disease experts worry about zoonotic diseases, diseases that pass from animals to humans. But I'm wondering if the opposite happens and if there is a rule about, you know, touching chimpanzees.
Absolutely. So, yes, chimpanzees are very susceptible to anything that we may get. So they get colds, they get flu. And so all of our staff have to be tested for tuberculosis every 6 months, and that's to make sure that we're not bringing tuberculosis into the colony because it can decimate the entire colony within days and weeks. So we use personal protective equipment, face shield and gloves, and a lot of that, I mean, certainly is to protect ourselves, but a lot of it is to protect the chimpanzees because if we're harboring some illness, then we can pass it right along to the chimpanzee. And depending on what it is, sometimes they have a hard time overcoming that ailment. We tell our staff who are working directly with the chimps to stay home if they're not feeling well.
The animals at Chimphaven can't be reintroduced into the wild. Why not?
Well, the fact is they don't remember being in the wild. If they were wild-born chimps, they were taken out of the wild when they were infants. And so there's a hierarchical structure. There's a process that the chimps in a group understand, a political grouping, if you will. And so chimpanzees in captivity would be considered outliers. You know, the other chimpanzees would probably not accept them and actually would try to kill them. And then there are natural predators for chimpanzees in the wild that these captive chimps have never experienced and would not know.
They wouldn't survive it.
Right. They would not survive it.
You know, you're not open to the public like a zoo, but you do engage the public, mm-hmm. and education is an important part of what you do. What do you want Americans most to know about the chimpanzees you're caring for?
I think it's really important for people to support what we do. Captive chimps live a long time. Our oldest chimpanzee is 61. And she shows no signs of going anywhere anytime soon. And so they can live well into their 60s. And it's really important, I think, for people to know that they did contribute a lot to science.
Beginning with the space program.
Absolutely. And, you know, we always say, oh, they gave so much. But we have to remember, they gave that unwillingly. So we owe them. I really do think we owe them. And providing the sanctuary for them is the very best that we can do.
All right. Thank you so much. Kathy Willis-Spratz, thanks for being with us.
Thanks. It was a great pleasure to be here.
That was Kathy Willis-Spratz, President and Chief Executive Officer of Chimphaven, the National Chimpanzee Sanctuary in Keithville, Louisiana. It's the only federally approved sanctuary for chimps that have been infected with AIDS and hepatitis. Although NIH says scientific advances have rendered the chimps largely unnecessary for medical research, hundreds of chimps remain caged in government research facilities. To learn more, check the links on our website, wpsu.org/take note. I'm Patty Satalia, WPSU.